You're listening to Informa Health and Nutrition's Hemp Collective Podcast, an industry-wide effort to cultivate responsible business practices and dig into the latest topics facing the hemp and CBD industry.
Hello, everyone. I'm Fran Schoenwetter, Director of Content Marketing at Informa Markets. And joining us today is Informa Markets' very own Josh Long. Josh is a senior legal and regulatory editor. He covers dietary supplements, food, and the hemp industries. Welcome, Josh, to our Hemp Collective podcast series.
Thank you, Fran. Good to be here.
So today we're going to be talking, we'll take a timely look at what's happening right now and what we can maybe, and I will repeat, maybe expect moving into 2021, primarily for hemp CBD. So let's get started. So small news item, I don't think anyone's noticed that we just had an election, right? So let's dive into a little future casting off the bat. What do you think? And, you know, this is your opinion, but your opinion based on your deeper well of knowledge. What do you think the impact may be with the incoming Biden administration on the industry, maybe as a whole?
At a very high level, we have, potentially a Biden administration. I believe we'd have a new FDA commissioner. We have, obviously, the number one priority at FDA remains COVID and getting vaccines out to the public. So that would obviously take priority over anything else. We have President-elect Biden's, one of his advisory committees is David Kessler, Dr. Kessler, previous FDA commissioner, who was not friendly to supplements. I wasn't covering the industry in the 90s, but according to everything everybody said, he was not very friendly to supplements or to Shea. So I guess it remains to be seen what influence he would have over the long term on CBD and supplements, for example, or the dietary supplement industry. We have a Congress. We still haven't figured out who's going to control the Senate, right? Because there's some races in Georgia. So if the Senate is controlled by the Republicans, then we have a split again with the Democrats controlling the House and the GOP controlling the Senate. If the Senate is controlled by the Dems, I guess that could provide some interesting possibilities in terms of legislation. And we also have a document before the White House's Office of Management and Budget on CBD enforcement discretion. That document has just been sitting there. My understanding, talking to Jonathan Miller yesterday of the U.S. Hemp Roundtable, is a few drafts have been going around. But because we have a new, likely a new administration coming in, from what I understand, it's very unlikely that we're going to see an enforcement discretion policy anytime soon during the transition.
Well, I just want to say that we do have a new administration coming in.
All right.
It's just a question of how smoothly that goes. And I'm glad you brought up Kessler. I remember him. I was in the industry through the 90s. And although he wasn't so friendly at the time, the industry has grown and evolved so much in the last 25 plus years that hopefully, you know, his perspective has changed too. So time will tell. We'll see how that looks. So another item that's come up also very recently is that a number of states have adopted CBD regulations over the last several weeks. New York and Kentucky come to mind. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
I haven't had the opportunity to study the specific state regulations in New York and Kentucky yet, but, you know, at a very high level, an increasing number of states have CBD, hemp CBD regulations governing labeling, even in some states, registration requirements, in some places, QR codes. And so what's happening is, you know, from Florida to Texas, California, not yet. Like you said, Kentucky, New York, some huge states. So what's happening is the states, they're not waiting for the Food and Drug Administration to regulate the space, because FDA is taking forever on this. And we've had a market for now several years. And they're filling the gaps that they feel are necessary to ensure that consumers are protected, that information is transparent, and that the markets are well regulated. And so from that standpoint, I think it's a good thing. On the flip side, according to Jonathan Miller at the US Hemp Roundtable and others who are in the industry that are really affected by this, it creates a patchwork of laws from one state to the next when we really should be having a national framework that would be consistent across the country. It would make it a lot easier for companies to do business across state lines, and it just makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the disadvantage is, as you say, that the patchwork, perhaps an advantage, a hidden advantage, is that with the states taking lead, we get to see what's effective and maybe what's not so effective as we eventually move towards formulating federal standards and regulations. So there is that. There's a little bit of trial in there. But, you know, from an enterprise point of view, it can make it really challenging for companies that are entering, not only just entering, but continuing in the space. We'll circle back on that in a minute about brands. But I wanted to, while we're still really talking about what's going on kind of in big government, so federally, FDA, through the Trump administration, recently submitted its fiscal year 2021 budget request to Congress. How do you think that would impact funding for CBD into 2021, Josh?
So, Fran, looks like according to the Alliance for a Stronger FDA, FDA has requested a total of $5 million for cannabis and cannabis derivatives across the Office of Regulatory Affairs, CIFSAN, and other parts of the agency, which would allow the agency to continue regulating cannabis-based derivatives such as CBD. And they mentioned dietary supplements, for example, in the specific language. It actually says one of their concerns too is that product developers are continuing to make unproven claims to treat serious or life-threatening diseases, and certainly they want to have sufficient resources to be able to remove those products from the market. They also want sufficient resources to be able to oversee FDA-regulated products such as dietary supplements and when CBD is used in unapproved food additives. I'm just reading essentially from the language in FDA's budget request through the Trump administration.
Well, you know, if hemp-derived cannabinoid products, CBD most notably, were regulated as dietary supplements, even that they're operating in that way. But if they truly were, then they would be subject to the same rules and regulations under DSHEA related to claims. So that would cover that. We're just not there yet. So, you know, it is definitely an upward educational task for a number of brands, again, emerging in the market to make sure that they produce the products and their product claims in alignment with where things are likely to be going. So what do you think should be, besides those things, or maybe even emphasizing those things, top of mind for hemp CBD brands as we enter 2021?
Well, what we've heard for years now, as you well know, is that if you're going to, for example, promote your product as a dietary supplement, which is really the world that I cover mostly, is that you should be following all the rules that you can. I mean, the irony is FDA says CBD is excluded from the definition of a dietary supplement. So they don't even consider if CBD was the only ingredient in your product, for example, the agency's position, ironically, is that they couldn't even go after you under its food and dietary supplement authorities for, you know, selling an adulterated supplement. They would consider that probably an unapproved drug. But I guess I'm kind of, that's kind of a sidebar. The point is if you're going to be marketing your product, your CBD products, you got to comply with as many regulations under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act as you can, because that's going to mitigate your risk of enforcement action, not only at the federal level, because FDA is not very active on that, but at the state level. Also, you're alleviating your risk of theoretically a class action lawsuit. You're alleviating your risks of the state attorney generals targeting you if you're, you know, going to endanger the public. The state AGs might even get involved in this business, which they really haven't been involved in yet, to my knowledge. I haven't seen the state AGs take a huge interest in CBD, but people started getting hurt, certainly could see them jumping in.
Wow. Yeah. You know, it sounds like hire a good, knowledgeable attorney.
Or just people that are, you know, really savvy in terms of, you know, what the regulations are. And there's so many different regulations, and attorneys, you know, they're not going to be able to really give you great advice on following CGMPs, for example. You're going to need to hire somebody like from a, you know, consulting firm that actually knows the nitty gritty of how to set product specifications, et cetera. And it's remarkable. Even a few years ago, I was talking to like pretty well-known brands in the CBD business, and I feel like they were just getting their arms around GMPs at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's a little scary.
Well, yeah. And, you know, bring people onto your team that come from that world to take you in the right direction. And that's another big takeaway in my mind. Is there anything else that you'd like to add that you think should be top of mind before we close?
I think it's just, we still have this vacuum in federal oversight, and we all know that it takes FDA years to complete or initiate, go through and complete a rulemaking process. We saw that with Ephedra and supplements. So it's just, it's unfortunate that the agency is taking so long to move ahead. I think depending on the substance of an enforcement discretion policy by the agency, that could help provide a lot of clarity. For example, if the policy said, if you follow these rules, A, B, C, and D, we're basically going to leave you alone. I think companies that are established that in the industry would feel a whole lot better, and perhaps some of the bigger CPG companies would come off the sidelines and enter the space. Perhaps not, depending on how conservative they are. And then we also have this, this lingering debate over, should FDA, should the industry just go to Congress and just lobby Congress harder to introduce something, because FDA is simply not going to move fast enough? And there was a bill introduced earlier in the year that would make CBD lawful dietary ingredient in dietary supplements. Apparently that has a number of co-sponsors. It may have a couple dozen co-sponsors already. So we'll see where that bill goes in 2021. But I think that if FDA is not going to, you know, do a rulemaking on CBD, that it seems like the logical solution is for Congress to pass legislation and force FDA to do so.
Mm. Wow. Thanks for that insight. That's a good, good top line overview there. We will eventually not be in a pandemic, and hopefully that will allow the space for more proceedings as well. Things have definitely been slogged up under the present circumstances in terms of priorities. Well, thank you, Josh, for taking some time out of your day today to talk with me and to enlighten our hemp audience through the Hemp Collective. And I hope to talk to you again soon, and as more developments happen.
Thanks, Fran. Appreciate being here. Have a great week.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Fran and Josh. And now I'm joined by RB Barroso, who's the co-founder of Green Roads, one of our Hemp Collective partners. Hi, RB. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Jessica. Thank you for having me.
So let's just jump right into this. And I'd love to hear a little bit about how Green Roads stays active in the CBD regulatory conversation.
mean, for Green Road, since we've been in the space for about 8 years, one of the things we kind of saw was, you know, obviously legislation and rules and regulations. I had 4 years previously in the cannabis space and kind of saw where that was going. And when we first started it, that was kind of in our business plan to kind of be part of what, you know, legislation, what the states and federal were going to do. So we've been extremely upfront and moving forward, and, you know, from the state laws in Florida, passing the pilot program in 2017, becoming one of the private partners for the University of Florida, and then getting a good group of partners in the state to help pass Senate Bill 1020, which puts a lot of regulatory things in place for consumer protection, which is really what drove us to do what we're doing and going out and lobbying and stuff like that. And this final year, we actually passed a couple things that we kind of missed in SB 1020. That's not Florida law, which is, we called it the glitch bill. And we passed that. It was an HB 921. And that was just signed this year. It's been extremely important in the space, for us to do that. And then now we're kind of moving more, towards the federal side. We had a presentation to the FDA on the 23rd, with a good group of partners in the space. And then we actually presented to OMB, because, you know, the FDA had come out with a guidance. So we're extremely involved in that space, and we feel that that's going to be like the blueprint for the industry. So we're definitely heavily involved.
Well, thanks for outlining that. I mean, it's clear that you guys have been extremely engaged in this and really helping to pave the way for, you know, what this should look like in the future. We also know that things can take a long time to change. And as at the same time, there's also sometimes unexpected things that happen. So I'm curious, you know, what you've done as a company to make sure that you have this agile business model that's also resilient, also compliant. There's a lot that you need to take into consideration to make sure that your business model can pivot based on regulatory changes. So how have you kind of guaranteed that you're ready for whatever's thrown your way?
Well, guaranteed is a strong word. There's in our space, there's really nothing guaranteed. Just the next day is kind of hopefully guaranteed. For us, it's kind of just trying to, you know, continue to, you know, move the bar. There is a lot of challenges in our space. I know since 2018, I think the hemp industry has really moved kind of quickly, passing that hemp bill in 2018 was big. And I think we've moved a lot towards kind of just an open market. But now with the FDA getting involved, what we definitely do need in the space is, you know, protecting the consumer. We understand that the FDA might not come out with a supplement calling or a food. But at least if they come out with, you know, testing regulations, you know, with an accredited lab, you know, full transparency on what THC levels are for consumers, because they do look at that. And just labeling requirements, you know, you see a lot of things out there that, you know, they say 30,000 milligrams for $19. I mean, we all know in this space that that doesn't make any sense. So that's kind of, you know, the direction that we're going. And then obviously fighting the hurdles, you know, when you're trying to legislate and lobby for the space, and then you have a new cannabinoid or new entrance of product like a Delta 8, you know, where people are actually selling the product, and there's a loophole on the hemp side, that just causes a lot of unforeseen obstacles that kind of get in front of us, because now you got to go and have those kind of conversations, you know, with the DEA or FDA or USDA of like, what are they going to do? So as the industry grows, there's a lot of little hurdles that come in front of you that you don't foresee. So you need to be prepared to kind of help answer those. And you're trying to eliminate those as much as you can, so we could kind of get to the goal line and know what that, you know, what that regulatory body looks like.
So let's get out our crystal balls for a second and talk about what you envision the future is going to be for the industry, particularly around the impact of the new administration on hemp and CBD next year and beyond. What do you think things are going to look like?
We're hoping that there's a lot of bipartisan, you know, and that's what we're working with. We work with the NIHC. They just received a $200,000 grant for international marketing. That's a big step, because that's almost considered like, you know, a commodity at that space. I think moving forward, I think There's going to be a lot of things that open up. I mean, we're trying to help with the farmers. I think there's going to be textiles involved. A lot of that's going to be going on, you know, different types of formulations. Hopefully there's GMP certifications for, companies that are making products. And as that gets more clear, I think the industry gets more clear, because right now you're kind of working, you know, they call it the Wild West. I don't call it that. I call it us just being able to be nimble enough to do what you're doing, but and have other companies and partners kind of follow in that direction. I think, you know, sky's the limit in this space. I think ancillary products, textiles, different formulations, you know, rules and regulations that will help legislate for people and companies to be successful. So I really truly believe that the market is just in its beginning. It's an infant. And I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities as we move forward. And it's kind of hard to say when you have, you know, a lot of CBD companies out there, you know, that are growing or not growing. But I think there's really a big opportunity in this space.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, I think that's a good message of optimism. And also hearing you talk about, you know, not viewing it as the Wild West, but really starting to see, you know, both more structure and then also all of these different opportunities. As we look at, you know, the different states, New York and Kentucky having new CBD regulations just in recent weeks, can you talk a little bit more about that and maybe what you think that means for other states or on a federal level?
I think it's a collab of states. It's, you know, it's almost like the cannabis industry. It really is. Every state has its individual rules and regulations, labeling requirements. I think a lot of these states are becoming uniformed. You know, obviously with SB 1020, we kind of followed Indiana rule when we were presenting that to our state. I think our state's done an amazing job with our ag commissioner, Nikki Fried, and Holly Bell have really done an amazing job. And now you have Texas with the HB 1325. You have 6968. And if you kind of look at all these, you know, these states that I've mentioned, they all have QR codes and full transparency for consumer protection. That is, I think, where this industry is going. I think we were one of the first companies to ever implement that in 2018, July 1st, when Indiana actually passed that rule. And we've kept that. And that's kind of what we've tried to push forward by individual states. I think we're up to like 7 or 8 states now that actually require that. And New York is now one of them. I think Kentucky's bill also follows that suit. So I think the federal FDA will kind of look at these state regulations and see what's working. I know Florida's pushing hard on that side on, you know, what we're doing here in the state of Florida. And I think that's going to really help the FDA make these types of decisions without actually making, you know, the, you know, a supplement or a food. As you know, that conversation we have with the FDA and about 50 partners in the space, or not in the space, but under, you know, like the space and wanted to have or listen to what we were talking about. We had Kelly Fair from Canopy Growth on. We had Kacha Labs, which is independent ISO accredited 17025 on this call. And our presentation with our 5 opinions of what we felt the space should look like included, you know, a QR code, full transparency to the consumer, labeling requirements, making testimonials on a product, which we know you can't do. So if we kind of fall in line and the federal FDA kind of looks at that, I think it's a really good pathway for us to take hopefully in the next year or hopefully sooner. I mean, the FDA has presented their guidance to the OMB now. We're hoping that that there's some of those opinions that we created for them fall in that legislative or in that guidance.
So what do we do now? Just wait and see? Or what are you all doing now? I know that just hearing you talk now, you're so active, you're so engaged in all of this. And then it also takes a degree of patience. So what comes next?
Being very patient. Just continuing to kind of be patient. I think we wait for obviously the transition for the country. And then continue to work with the NIHC, continue to push what we feel, you know, individual states have done, have the FDA kind of look at those individual legislative laws that have passed, and then help push them along to continue to kind of get to a point where we understand this, you know, maybe their first guidance might be the first phase. You know, we probably see two or three phases as the years come around. Hopefully we have help with the farmers with that 0.5 instead of the 0.3. You have testing that's pretty unrealistic for a lot of these farmers, which kind of could hurt the industry. So I think we just continue to push forward. We don't, you know, you don't take no for an answer. We never have since we started in this business. You continue to educate the legislators now on the federal level. You continue to have conversations with states and, you know, kind of educate them on what Florida's done and other states have done and followed suit. And then just continue to work. It's really about just continuing to work and help educate them so we can get these processes in place.
Well, I love that persistence and perseverance. And I think everything that you all do represents that. And thanks for, you know, reiterating the importance of just in all of this, the importance of transparency and open communication, both from, you know, a business practices perspective, but also, you know, the products and the supply chains. And of course, that's so important. And I just think you all really embody those values. So thank you for your work and your stewardship in the industry.
Thank you so much, Jessica. It's been a great team effort, and the team is stronger than ever, and we're going to continue to push forward for this space and this industry and hopefully create a lot of successful people in the space.
So thanks, everybody, for tuning in again. And on behalf of Jessica Rubino and myself, Fran Schoenwetter, we thank you all for tuning in to the Hemp Collective podcast episode, and happy hemping.